the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, it is that time of the year. The year's just about over. It's a time that people start thinking not only about the holidays, but also about charitable gifting. It's a nice time to get a tax deduction. But when you give a gift to charity, can you be sure that your money is going to work? Joining us on the program is the president and founder of Charity Watch, Daniel Borikoff. And Daniel, give us a little bit of a background, how you got involved in an organization that really evaluates charity. I mean, it's sort of a niche market. Not too many people do it. But give us a little bit of a background, how you got there.
Okay, well, I think your listeners can probably understand, because I actually had worked for ValueLine and Merrill Lynch on Wall Street doing investment financial type work. And I realized that a lot of Americans were giving rather blindly. They didn't really pay that much attention. They were too caught up in the surface in giving. They made the false assumption that if a charity does some good, they must be a good organization. But people, you know, they really need to keep in mind that any charity, no matter how bad it is, does something good that they point to. So you as a donor have to ascertain how much good is being done in the relationship that the charity's received. Also, having a financial background, I could scrutinize the finances. And, you know, I'm sure on your show, you regularly go through difficult financial reporting of businesses and some of the manipulations that are done to boost earnings. Well, hey, in the charity world, they're just as creative, if not more. And there's all kinds of unusual scenarios being used to make a charity look like it's doing a lot more than it really is. This is something that Charity Watch does, a deep dive of the finances. This is our specialty, because a lot of what's on the internet, it's a lot of like very surfacey type of robo ratings where they're just grinding through formulas based on a tax form, and that doesn't always work. You really have to understand what's going on with the charity. Just like in the company, you got to go, you know, line by line, note by note, and, you know, and ask questions for vagueness. This is something that Charity Watch does. So personally, I founded the organization about 23 years ago. I figured it's the best thing that I can do to improve the world, because if we can accomplish more with our charitable dollars, when we give as a nation over $300 billion a year, and it's more like a trillion if you consider all the revenues that charities get and the government grants charities get. So I really wanted to help, you know, improve our country and the world by helping enlighten people to be more thoughtful, take giving to a higher level, and not just give because you're asked, which, by the way, is the number one reason why people give.
You know, it's rather interesting, because a lot of people just think, you know, if it's, let's say, an accredited charity acceptable by the IRS, that charities operate with metrics. You know, we used to see this in the investment business. I can remember back in the days when limited partnerships were the big thing that were sold to investors in the 80s. But when you looked deeply into the prospectus and you found out that very little out of a dollar, maybe only 60 cents was actually going into a real estate investment or an oil investment. Everything else was coming out in expenses and fees. You take that same approach when you look at charity. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the metrics that you use? Because I think that's really important that, you know, we've heard stories on the news where certain charities were paying lavish salaries, bonuses, you know, fancy junkets for their top brass. And that's not what you want to see in a charity.
No, and actually, you hit up on a point that I want to first address about these filings. Well, get ready for a flood of extra charitable solicitations coming up, because the IRS, which is the place that determines whether or not you can be a charity that is tax deductible and can take tax deductible contributions, they have a new EZ form that charities can use. And charities used to have to do a 26-pager, putting budgets and all kinds of planning information. Now, certain charities that say they want to be smaller, having assets of $250,000 or less, are allowed to do a 3-page form, like a lot of checkoff boxes primarily. So it's become really easy to be a charity. So all the more reason to be careful and really know what's behind the solicitation that you receive. Now, as far as your question about some of the metrics that we use, a higher rated charity is going to get 70% of its budget towards program expenses. is what a more highly rated. They're not going to spend more than $25 to raise $100. But where that gets a little tricky and where Charity Watch comes in is a lot of times what a charity says as a program really isn't something that you would consider to be a program at all. Like, say you get a solicitation from an anti-drinking and driving group and they tell you to buckle your seatbelt or don't drink and drive. So now what they can do is they can say that cost of that solicitation is actually a program service. Very weak program, particularly since they send these solicitations to people that don't really have much use or need for that information. So what we do at Charity Watch is we take that out. We take out the disguised cost, like what they say is public awareness, and it can be many things. It could be telling us that injured veterans have needs, you know, telling you to fly the flag. These kind of innocuous messages that are obvious for most people, we don't let them count that as a program. But really encourage people to hone in on what is a program. Like, for instance, there's a veterans charity that claims they have a job employment program. Well, Charity Watch looked into it and found out that the job employment program was getting veterans out in the street to beg for money, and the charity could have. Now, that's really not something to help a veteran get back on his feet. It's not like teaching them how to do plumbing or be a nurse or something useful and practical that can boost a veteran up. So this happens a lot. So that is, I strongly encourage people to hone in on these type of things. This is a financial program, but like, let me give you an example. A great veterans charity, Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, that builds hospitals for injured veterans or to help rehabilitate veterans. What they do is they build it and then they hand it over to the Department of Defense when they've completed the project. Well, if you look at their finances, you won't see much in the way of program spending because it's a capital asset. It's not an expense. And so you want to give them credit for it because they're spending the money the way you'd want. Though if you go to one of these places on the internet where it's just showing you, you know, program divided by total expense, they're not going to look good, which is really unfair because they're doing what you would want with their money, with their substantial programs to help veterans. You addressed earlier about you got to ask who's doing the asking. A lot of charities will basically sell their soul and give 85, 90% to professional fundraising companies who are in it for the business. And, you know, most don't do that, which is fortunate, but be particularly careful of what I call the hero charities, the police, firefighter, veterans, because people are very sympathetic to those causes. And a lot of times, you know, they will give pretty much automatically based on emotion. So the professional fundraisers can make a lot of money off those type of groups. So do be careful with that. Salaries can be a big problem, but do keep in mind that some of these groups are really large and need significant salaries because maybe they need a medical doctor, maybe they need somebody that can manage a large bureaucracy or something. So what I find, hone in on the vendors. Some of the real F-rated charities, it's the vendors that are getting most of the money. So I would check on those and then check to see whether there's any conflict of interest, any board members making business transactions with the charity. So at CharityWatch.org, we also look at governance and accountability measurements, and we have our top-rated groups in 36 categories. So if people are looking this holiday season to find a highly rated group, they can go to CharityWatch.org and go to the top rated and get some ideas for some particular groups that they might want to give to. I know it's a challenge for the donor. I mean, there's over, you know, a million charities, but a little effort can exponentially increase your good. And just to give you an example, Jim, a lot of these charities have very similar names. Like, do you know the difference between Breast Cancer Relief Foundation and Breast Cancer Research Foundation? So the only difference there is one uses the word relief and the other word uses the research foundation. Like, would you know if you got a phone call from the Breast Cancer Relief Foundation? And you probably wouldn't know the difference. Most people wouldn't because the names are so close. Well, there's a huge difference. The Breast Cancer Research Foundation gets an A-plus from Charity Watch, with 91% of its budget going to programs, whereas the Breast Cancer Relief Foundation gets an F from Charity Watch, with only 21% of its budget going to bona fide charitable programs.
Wow. When you take a look at a lot of the charities, I think, what do you follow? I think I read somewhere it's like 650 or something close to that.
We cover about that many groups. I mean, we regularly update over 600 different charitable organizations, which tend to be the larger ones and the ones that are most actively soliciting the public for funds.
So when you take a look at the spectrum of charities in terms of dollars, I call it dollars going into the ground, actually going into the benefit that they're proposing for their organization. On the high side, what would you say is the best in terms of percentages going to work? And on the low side, what's the worst that you've seen?
Oh, I mean, the worst is like nothing, right? And then the highest could be 99%. But do have some consideration for a group that's like structured more differently. Like if they're getting most of their money from the government, the cost of fundraising is going to be lower. If it's a brand new group, like say in the first 3 years, they're going to tend to have higher overhead costs. Sometimes it could be like a highly controversial group where maybe it's harder for them to raise money, but still an important cause you want to support, and there's not another group that does it, you might still want to support them. So we encourage people to factor these ratings into their giving decision, these ratios in particular, but don't use that as the only criteria. Another factor that we haven't talked about is asset level. We have a chart that's very interesting to people that shows you how much the group already has. And CharityWatch's position is that if a group's already got 5 years or more of its budget or its total expenses, then that's a poor basis to ask for more money, and we give them an F grade. And groups start to get downgraded if they've got more than 3 years worth of money, available money. We're not talking about land, building, and equipment. We're talking about cash or investments that are liquid that they could spend if they want to. So, for instance, if somebody came to you on the street and said, can you give me money, you know, beggar, and then you find out that he's got five times his annual expenses in the bank, would you give him money? Probably
no.
Not, right? So why should you give money to a charity that's already got over five times its budget in the bank? Because most charities don't have much money. They have less than a year's worth, and they probably are going to have to turn away people that need their services because they don't have enough funding. So why do people want to give money to a charity that's already got 5 years worth in the bank? I know there are things like Harvard University. It's a prestige for individual alumni to pile money on them. But if it's a charity that's helping, particularly if it's a charity that's helping the poor or the needy or the sick, you know, they probably shouldn't be sitting on piles of money because there's obvious needs for that.
When you look at these various organizations, and I want to point out, it's my understanding that your funding is raised through, I think, what is it, a $40 a year subscription to your newsletter?
$50 that gives you access to all of the information. Now, we like that model, but we have lots of free information, the articles and the top rated. The reason why we do it that way is we don't want to be like the Better Business Bureau, because what they do is they charge up to $30,000 to the charities to use their seal, you know. And so I don't want to be taking big money from the charities I'm supposed to be watchdogging or evaluating. It's kind of makes it hard to do, right? You know, you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. So, and also we don't take any advertising. You know, you'll go to other sites and you see a lot of charity advertising. We don't want to do that. So this keeps us independent. And, you know, we're also a cause because we want to promote informed giving, and we think a lot of good can be done that way. And we are a nonprofit.
I know there was an article, for example, there was a organization that was a charity that was building schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Its co-founder, Greg Mortensen, wrote a book, Three Cups of Tea, in 2007. In fact, even the President of the United States, Barack Obama, donated some of his Nobel Prize money to the charity. But you were picking up some things that you were seeing via an audit that put a lot of the motives of this organization into question.
Oh, yes. Because we're a resource for giving, a lot of people approached us. Central Asian Institute, and it was a very popular charity, particularly because of the best-selling book, Three Cups of Tea, and some other books that Greg Mortensen had looked. And so we looked into it, and we were noticing that the website and the material of the charities was like full of advertisements for books and speaking fees. So we looked at the audits and tax forms, and we noticed that a lot of the expenses were going to be paying for these lectures and cost of producing books, cost of putting ads in publications for books. And so we see the expenses. And so the obvious question is, where's the revenue? All these expenses for books and lectures, where's the revenue from it? Well, the revenue was going to Greg Mortensen's pocket, not to the charity. And in fact, more money was being spent on these book promotion tours than on helping girls in Pakistan and Afghanistan, which is like the point of the charity. The other problem that we found is they weren't making audits available. So we contacted the attorney generals and let them know that they needed to provide this information. So we started covering in the 60 Minutes, became aware of our concerns, and we worked with them, and they took it more broadly and found that there were a lot of schools that the charity was claiming were built and were being used to store hay or were like in remote areas where the kids couldn't even reach them. So the charity was taking credit for a lot that it wasn't accomplishing. And then John Krakauer found out a lot in the books that he wrote, a lot of falsehoods. But we found out about the financial problems at Charity Watch and let the public know. And, you know, it's tough as a watchdog because when we first started criticizing Central Asia Institute and Greg Mortensen, I mean, people thought of him as a saintly figure and people were very angry with us. And we've learned as watchdogs, we have to go after even the most popular cause if something's wrong and people don't know the truth of what's really behind the individual or the charity. In fact, we've got a Hall of Shame list. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, Jim, but it'll probably really startle you because a lot of people that are highly looked upon and were unfortunately got involved with charities that were awful and were ripping the public off. And, you know, people are only human and you can't assume that it's always going to work out in the public's interest.
It's amazing because you would think, you know, here was the president of the United States that was making a donation to the organization, which to me would give it some credibility if the president's doing it, giving part of his Nobel Prize money to it. And yet you come across this. Do you ever find, because you have to take on charities and you have to report it the way you see it, that sometimes there's a little bit of hostility or maybe some hesitancy on an organization when they know you're looking into them?
Oh, yeah, we get that, but we do have some leverage because a lot of donors do follow us and they may not be able to get a contribution if they don't cooperate with us. So, you know, that is a way to pry information. And I think that's something that the donor ought to factor into the equation is a charity willing to answer basic questions about its operations and activities and finances? If they're not, probably best to look elsewhere.
Now, I'm on your website right now. Can you give us just your Hall of Shame, some idea of who these organizations or people might be?
You know, some of them, the Hall of Shame highlights individuals that have committed scams or misappropriated money or basically, you know, deceive the American public and wasted our valuable charitable dollars. So they can be like the founder of Feed the Children, very popular charity. They had been gaming their audits and tax forms, the in-kind goods, inflating the value of what they're distributing to huge degrees. In fact, I encourage people to read an article called The Alice in Wonderland World of Charity Valuations. And from that article, you can see how groups could take something worth pennies and then say it was worth $10. You know, say you take a drug like a deworming pill, a vitamin, an antibiotic that you can have manufactured in India for pennies and then put like a valuation where if it was sold in the developed world, you know, it might be a $10 drug. But then charities are able to sometimes do this and show that they're doing a lot more. And one of the problems is charities can hide the international distributions. The IRS allows this. So that can be a problem because you don't know who they're distributing it to and what it actually is and how exactly it's valued. So what we do at Charity Watch is with the in-kind goods, because the charities aren't required to disclose what they are, we take that out of the equation and look at the dollars. Like you give dollars to the charity, what does the charity do with the dollars? If they want to take all of these deworming pills that they pay pennies for and say they're worth many dollars, well, we're taking that out of the equation so you can't inflate your spending to look a lot better than you really are. So we find that this to be really helpful to follow the cash.
You know, Daniel, in looking at the charities that you follow, can you give me sort of an example of what would be one of your top-rated charities and what makes them top-rated in terms of the way they're set up, the way they conduct themselves, the dollars that go into the ground, and then contrast to one that is everything that is the epitome of a charity that you don't want to give to?
I hate to single out one in particular, but, you know, I encourage people to go to the top-rated groups and see that there's many groups that are able to get most of their money to bona fide real programs that people would want to support and that are efficient and doing something worthwhile. and then they're being reasonable with the fundraising. Like sometimes a charity's like a business and they figure as long as we get a margin, we don't care. So, you know, we can go out there and we can spend. I mean, this is basically what's happened is you get a charity and a fundraising company comes in and says, I'll get you $1 million. You don't have to do any work. And the charity goes, okay, great. But then they may go out and spend $10 million to get that $1 million. So that's not fair to the donor. The donor is getting taken advantage of. And so a lot of these charities where they blanket everybody, they call everybody, they mail out to any zip code that has a higher income on it, whereas an efficient charity is going to find out the people that are most likely interested in their cause, and they're going to target it to reach out to those people that have an expressed interest in those cause, not just ask everybody, because it's just really expensive to raise money that way. And there's been studies done that show, like, if the average gift size is larger, the charity tends to be more efficient. If the average gift size is really small, like, so if the charity's just trying to get a couple of dollars from everybody, it's going to be expensive to do. But if they're going to go out and get larger amounts, say $100 or more, that kind of charity tends to be a lot more efficient to give to. But there are a lot of F groups in particular categories, particularly like veterans and cancer and police and firefighters. So be alert to that. Also, another thing that we haven't talked about that I want people to be thoughtful about is when there's a disaster, people like immediately want to give money to a disaster, to help in a disaster. And there are groups that pop up that may not have a track record of being able to help, and they may clog up the supply lines and make it harder for the charities that really are effective in helping and know how to do that. So we always, if there's a disaster, we have a now up about the Syrian refugee crises, that we at Charity Watch have our top rated groups and give people ideas and suggestions of who they might support during the disaster scenario. You know, people do want to help out when that went on.
You bring up a good point there, Daniel, because a lot of times when you see these disasters unfold, whether it's an earthquake in Haiti, a tsunami or something, you see the tragedy, the human tragedy. Americans are a generous people and they tend to want to give to that. But I can remember in several organizations, whether it was in Haiti or elsewhere, that basically a lot of money that was thought to be doing good did not really get there and it was misspent. And so let me ask you this. You charge $50 for your newsletter.
Well, it's for access to the website, which gives, there's like five tabs of information on over 600 charities having to do with financial performance, governance, accountability, letter grade rating, finances.
Yeah, because I think it would be worthwhile. I mean, if you're going to give a significant amount of money, or even worse, let's say that you are a person that is very well off, you set up a charitable remainder trust, you're giving to a charity substantial sums of money. We came across your organization because I had a client who set up a charitable trust with multiple millions of dollars that were going to go into these charities. And I recommended that, you know, we research and do some work in terms of determining how much of this money was going to work. Now, one of them was sort of a special one because it was the alma mater in which the wife went to college. So part of the money that went into the trust was going to fund a new wing at the college. So there was a direct correlation to the way the money was being used. But for so many people, as you mentioned or read about, the organization that you discovered wasn't up front. Here you had the President of the United States donating it. So it's really surprising.
All kinds of famous people, celebrities that are endorsing things that sometimes they even get paid, like General Tommy Franks getting paid $100,000 to sign a letter endorsing a very lousy veterans charity who's help hospitalize veterans who's not even allowed to be in the veterans hospital. They're so bad. So, you know, these kind of things happen. So, you know, you need to do your research because people don't take it serious enough with charities. I mean, like, you'll appreciate this as a financial investment person, that sometimes charities just decide not to have audits. Like, we're not going to have an audit this year. And it's against the law in many states, but they just do it, and they get away with it. So you really got to do your due diligence and, you know, look into these groups. And, you know, Charity Watch, that's our mission.
Well, I tell you, $50 for access for the kind of hard work that you do, I mean, it's just like in the investment business. When we're looking at a company, we're going to look at their financial statements. We're going to take a look at the annual report. What did management say in their discussion of results? Are they been honest, transparent? I mean, it's the same thing when you're choosing a charity. And to me, $50 is a reasonable cost. As we close, Daniel, you want to give out your website. So if any of our listeners are in that charitable mode as we get towards the end of the year, they're thinking of giving to a charity, it may be worthwhile to spend the $50 to find out that the money you're giving is going to a good cause, and most of it is going to the cause itself.
CharityWatch.org is the website. We also have a charity rating guide that we in print that we publish for the people that prefer not to use the internet. But CharityWatch.org, and you make a good point that the $50 could easily be thrown away in giving to a group that's just wasting your money. So it's really not much considering how you could easily give to a group that's not very good.
Well, I tell you, it's money well spent, and it was something that I found useful. Anytime my wealthy clients are going to donate money to charity, we use your organization because $50, you know, is reasonable. It's no different than when you're researching a stock, but I'm surprised at the amount of money that's given each year that basically does not research the kind of things that they're doing. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on the program. Keep up the great work. It's nice to know organizations like yours exist.
Okay, thank you.
You know, it's amazing that people give money to charity every year. I mean, it's in the millions of dollars, let's face it. That's why people who believe we should tax charities like to thump on that little thing every once in a while and say, oh, we could be getting all this money, blah, 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 blah. But the real problem is how effective is your charity using the money that is given? Typically, how much of a dollar, say, for example, what percentage of it goes to the purpose for which it was solicited? And there's this pernicious thing that takes over organizations. I've seen it in the religious arena where all of a sudden administration and marketing start to chew up more and more and more and more of the budget, you know? And so you have to be careful of that because, as he just pointed out, the IRS doesn't always cover that.
No, they don't. And we talked about a well-known organization that was very popular in Washington. The president himself made a substantial gift. And as he pointed out, most of the money was going to the guy that started the organization. It wasn't going to the charity. So, you know, I became acquainted of this because I have a lot of wealthy clients and that give large gifts to charity. We have a lot of charitable trusts that we manage. And that's one of the first things we do that I always try to bring it up to my client, even though they may have a particular preference. You know, I always try to point out to them, you know, are you aware that this charity that you have an affinity for, not a lot of your money is going to work. It's going for big salaries and a lot of overhead and marketing expenses, and very little is going into the ground doing the work of the charity in terms of what it's supposed to be doing as an organization. So, folks, it is that time of the year where people are giving to charity. You make that last-minute gift, you get the deduction. And for those of you that have the means and have substantial assets that are thinking of working with an advisor, setting up a charitable remainder trust, it may behoove you to pay the $50 and take a look at the organizations you're thinking of and really find out, are they doing what they say they're doing, and how much of your money is actually going to do the work that the organization purports to be doing? So once again, it's charitywatch.org, and I highly recommend it if you're in that charitable mood. In the meantime, well, we're out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.